Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg, heading your way next on Route 51, a special broadcast of the WXPR Rhinelander debate between the candidates for Northern Wisconsin's 12th State Senate District, Republican Tom Tiffany.
You've taken one of the major risk factors out of mining.
Democrat Susan Summer.
It causes acid mine drainage, which is sulfide pollution.
And Libertarian Paul Ehlers.
I think we do need encompassing mining laws.
Over the next hour, you'll hear the 12th State Senate candidates debate mining legislation, jobs in the economy, education, collective bargaining, and social issues, as recorded in the WXPR Rhinelander studios on Wednesday, September 19th. The debate will be heard in its entirety, except for the candidates' opening statements, which were deleted because of time considerations. And now, WXPR Rhinelander News Director Ken Krall.
Welcome to a one-hour broadcast to help you make a decision as to who will fill the 12th State Senate seat for the Northwoods and Central Wisconsin. This is Ken Krall, News Director at WXPR Public Radio and moderator for this forum. Joining me are three candidates seeking the seat opened when incumbent Democrat Jim Holprin decided not to run again. We have in alphabetical order Libertarian Party candidate Paul Ehlers from Rhinelander, Democratic Party candidate Susan Summer from Phelps, and Republican candidate Tom Tiffany from Hazelhurst. Our media panel tonight at the WXPR studios is WJFW-TV anchor and reporter Matt Doyle, North Star Journal editor Craig Mandley, Wisconsin Public Radio's anchor and host of Route 51, Glenn Moberg, and reporter Kyle Rogers from the Northwoods River News. Good evening to all of you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And we begin with a question from Matt Doyle to Paul Ehlers.
All right, so I think we're going to start off with Act 10 has come back into the news recently with a Dane County judge trying to strike down the Act 10 right now. And so I guess going back to what that legislation came up in 2011, would you support Act 10 as it is going forward, and what would you do in if you were elected to the 12th Senate to deal with Act 10 and collective bargaining?
Okay, well, I think the actions of a legislature are just as important as the results, and I don't think the ends justify the means. I think it was extremely heavy-handed, and so I'm glad it's in the courts. That said, I don't see where the public unions were very proactive in trying to save the taxpayers any money. I work for a public union, and I've received raises over the last 10 years. So I understand budgeting, you know, balancing the budget. You know, by law, they have to. It's the minimum we should expect our legislatures to do, but I do not agree with the method that it was done.
Susan, your response to Matt's question.
The way that the whole situation as far as balancing the budget was done was so destructive to the state and to our 12th state Senate district in particular. And I agree with Mr. Ehlers that the means do not justify the ends. I don't even agree with the ends. I think that every person has the right to collectively bargain. I think that this was simply a way for the current administration to try to tell all of us that they have balanced a budget when in truth what they did was simply shift monies around to make it look as if we did have a balanced budget. The goal was always to get rid of collective bargaining, first with public employees, and there very well could be an attempt at some time to do that with the private sector unions as well. And the end result of doing all that, not only the inability to acknowledge that everyone has the right to collectively bargain, but the end result of the destructive nature for what it's done in particular to our children and the excellence in education that has always been such a strong ethic for us here in the 12th State Senate District is just irreparable. It needs to be changed. This is a start, as Mr. Ehlers explained, this lawsuit. It's good that it's being challenged in the courts, but we need to take that further and work to restore the collective bargaining rights.
Good time. Tom?
I voted for Act 10 as a state representative in the Assembly. I believe it was a critical piece to fixing the budget hole of $3.6 billion that we inherited going into this past legislative session. And That budget is now balanced, first legitimately balanced budget in over a decade. And it really allowed schools much greater flexibility to be able to run their operations with local control. For instance, one of the schools in my district currently, Tomahawk, saved $500,000 on health insurance. And their teachers basically have the same health insurance policy, but they're saving $500,000. It allowed Tomahawk to renegotiate some bonds that they have, and they're saving $200,000 annually now as a result of that renegotiation on that bonding. And the savings ended up being about $700,000, a large part of that health insurance. I'm seeing news stories coming out of Eagle River with the Northland Pine School, the Three Lakes School District, saying the administration there is saying we are using the flexibility that we have now to be able to run our schools better, and they believe there's a bright future in front of them. And, you know, at the end, we're all in this together. We all needed to pay something towards our health insurance and towards our pension. I mean, I went from, in the private sector, having health insurance for $650 a month for me and my family. Once I was elected to the assembly, it became $89 a month. My wife looked at me twice when I came home and told her that. Now, we're now paying $210 because we have to pay a little bit more towards our health insurance. I think that's appropriate.
Okay, that was Tom Tiffany. So we will next go to our next question, and that'll be from Craig Mandley, and it'll be towards Susan Summer.
Susan, with the divide seemingly greater than ever between Republicans and Democrats at both the federal and the state level, is there any hope that the two parties can find middle ground to accomplish meaningful legislation?
Yes, of course there is. Because if we fail to do that, then we aren't going to accomplish anything for our state, much less our 12th state Senate district. We have got to find middle ground so that we can stand up and protect the common ground, so that we can come together and work for the common good. We have a challenge. Do we have the capacity to create a politics that's worthy of the human spirit? Something that stands for what we all want to be, what we dream of, the reason that we are Americans, that we value what is so important to us. Our ethic has always been about working together for the common good. That's part of our Constitution. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, to promote the general welfare. And when you look at Wisconsin and what we have always been here in Wisconsin, a progressive state that cares about our values, and you bring those home to northern Wisconsin in our 12th state Senate district, our community ethic, our work ethic, our conservation ethic, all of those bound together, you bet we've got to figure out a way to work this out. We must do it. We will do it. And we will do that because people will be elected when those of us who are voters become informed and understand that the way we move forward in this state is by working together. We honor and recognize our differences. We hold those tensions. We acknowledge them, and we proceed together into our future.
Okay, time. That was Susan Summer. Now Tom Tiffany.
Yes, I found ways to work with some of my colleagues across the aisle, and I'll give you a couple examples. There was a mandate that had been put in place in 2010 at the end of the Doyle administration requiring the mandatory disinfection of public water supplies, and that affected a number of communities here in northern Wisconsin, including Tomahawk in my state assembly district. And both Senator Holperin and I signed on as co-sponsors of that bill, and we overturned that mandate, saving local communities a lot of money. In the case of Tomahawk, they saved $250,000 by not having to implement that mandate. And I know they were very appreciative that we worked together on that. Another one, Senator Holper and I authored a bill to allow some of the Christmas tree growers in the Merrill area to be able to haul more trees. There was a glitch between state and federal law, and we helped craft a solution to that. We got it passed, and they're able to haul more trees and be more profitable as a business here in north central Wisconsin. So I have reached across the aisle and worked together. But I will not compromise my principles in terms of we have to have a legitimately balanced budget, because if we run budget deficits like we have over the last decade, today's budget deficits end up being tomorrow's tax increases. and people cannot afford to pay more in taxes. So I'm certainly going to work with people across the aisle when I can, and but I'm not going to sell out my principles.
Okay, that was Tom Tiffany. Now Paul Ehlers.
I think it's possible that the Republicans and Democrats can work together, but they haven't. Anybody ever hear of gerrymandering? That's where they rewrite the legislative districts so that they can get reelected and the other guy can't. This has been going back, you know, for hundreds of years. Jay Heck from Common Cause said that the Republican Party of Wisconsin was a wholly owned subsidiary of the Wisconsin Manufacturers Association. He also said that the Democratic Party of Wisconsin was a wholly owned subsidiary of WEAC. And so I just don't see this happening. I actually kind of see myself as the swing vote. I see the split along the state, Republican, Democrat, and I see that an independent or a third party candidate would be the person that would be the bridge between the two parties. So frankly, I don't see it happening.
Okay. I guess if there's no rebuttal.
Are we allowed to?
Yeah, you can rebut.
I really appreciate some of Paul's comments here. And if people are looking for some libertarian thinking from the mainstream parties, it's come from us this session, where we believe in limited government and we're moving in that direction. I have fought endlessly to end mandates. I can give numerous examples where I've brought agency heads up here to talk about the overburdening mandates and some of the rules and regulations that are put in place that really impede economic progress here in northern Wisconsin. So I am working towards that end to have a limited government solution, because I believe our local units of government know far better than the bureaucrats in Madison how to run their local communities.
Susan?
Thank you. If people are looking for somebody who's an independent thinker, a thoughtful and responsible legislator, someone who's not just going to vote along party lines because that's what their party tells them to do, then I would encourage them to become informed voters and take a look at the three of us. And I think when you do that, you will find out that Mr. Tiffany was often the person who followed party lines, who did what he was asked to do, who introduced legislation when that was the agenda for the administration. And I am definitely a person, because I am so tired of the partisan politics, I am not going to do what any particular party tells me to do if it's not the right thing to do. We need independent people down there who think independently and are thoughtful and responsible legislators.
You're listening to the 12th State Senate Candidates Debate with Libertarian Paul Ehlers, Democrat Susan Summer, and Republican Tom Tiffany, recorded in the WXPR Rhinelander Studios on Wednesday, September 19th.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, adapting renewable energy and wood heat solutions to meet the needs of homes, farms, and business. Information at northwindre.com.
And we'll proceed in this forum tonight with Glenn Moberg next with a question for Tom Tiffany.
Mr. Tiffany, you've worked hard to change mining regulations in the state of Wisconsin in order to allow an iron mine in the Pinoki Range south of Lake Superior. But should our mining laws be changed to accommodate the desires of just one company, even if it means hundreds of good-paying jobs in the region? And I'd like you to also address an allegation that's been made on the campaign trail. Is there a hidden agenda, as your opponent Susan Summer is charged, to relax the mining laws in order to make it easier to get a zinc mine using sulfur in the town of Lynn in Oneida County?
Well, the bill that I worked on, AB 426, I spent a fair amount of time on at the latter part of when the bill was voted on before it was voted on in the state assembly, was very specific to iron ore. And there isn't any other agenda there. It makes great sense to have a separate iron mining regulation or statute versus how we do it currently in Wisconsin. And currently, I'm having a little trouble with my headset. Currently, under mining law, all types of mining are in that same statute. Iron ore mining is completely different than sulfide mining. They use mechanical means to separate the ore from the rock, other types of salt like sulfide mining, zinc, gold, others. They use chemicals to separate the ore from the rock. You've taken one of the major risk factors out of mining. So the bill we passed was very specific to iron ore. And we didn't do it for one particular company. Whoever wants to apply for a permit, they can apply for a permit. But this will create 700 direct jobs up in Iron County, 3,000 jobs besides that that are ancillary to that, and it's jobs all the way from Lake Superior down to the southeastern part of the state. A $1.5 billion estimate. It is rare that any state gets a company that says, we want to invest $1.5 billion in your state. What a shot in the arm, and we can do this in an environmentally safe manner.
Okay, that was Tom Tiffany. Next, Paul Ellers.
Well, I teach geology at Nicolet College. I'm really not a geologist, but you know, I've got a pretty good background in it, and I like minerals, okay, and I'm frankly mostly pro-mining. And I agree with Mr. Tiffany that there are fewer problems with this type of an iron mine as opposed to a sulfide-type mine. That said, I don't think we should carve out a niche. I think we do need encompassing mining laws. But we need something different than what we have. If you guys remember the Crandon mine site, the DNR worked on that for 25 years and never made a decision. So that's obviously insane. That's got to change. However, I'm not sure a year and a half to 2 years is long enough. There's got to be something between 2 years and 25 years. My attitude towards mining, it really impacts the local areas the most. The town of Lynn people did not want to mine. I would have been against that. It seems like the people in the Mellon area are for it, but I know other people in Ashland County are not for it. So I think that's a little bit more problematic. But in general, I'm in favor of mining. I think it can be done safely. I'm not sure it will be done safely, but I think theoretically it's possible to be done safely. And any mine that happens in Wisconsin will be 1,000 times safer or better than a mine in some developing country.
Paul Ellers and Susan Summer.
Could you repeat the first part of the question, please?
Should our mining laws be changed to accommodate the desires of just one company if it means hundreds of good-paying jobs in the region? And also, as you had charged, is there a hidden agenda here to relax the mining laws in order to make it easier to get a zinc mine using sulfides in the town of Lynn in Oneida County?
We're dealing with two premises there. First of all, that an out-of-state mining company should be able to come into Wisconsin and tell us that we need to change our mining laws or else we're just going to leave and we're going to leave you behind with no jobs. We haven't lost jobs because there are no jobs at this point. And the reality about the jobs, if you study it and look into it, is that many of those jobs are going to come from somewhere else. The skills that are required in order to work in those mines are not ordinarily found and certainly won't be found up around Hurley and Mellon. Because people have to go to school, they have to be trained. It is a larger operation, as Mr. Tiffany was pointing out, with bigger machinery. You've got to have skilled workers. Many of these mining companies actually bring people in, sometimes from even out of the country, to do the jobs. And it is a boom and bust industry. So the throwing it out there that this is a jobs bill is such an inappropriate name for it. We have a perfectly good mining law right now in the state of Wisconsin, and it should not be changed unless there is thorough research done. What happened in this particular case is that Gogebic Taconite came into Wisconsin and demanded the law be changed. It was done quickly. It was tried to be pushed through without any thoughtful process involved. Our current mining legislation was the result of a consensus process. It is not accurate to say that the Crandon mine site, that the DNR dragged that on for 25 years. The truth is that the succession of companies that came through are the ones who made that decision.
Susan, that's
yes.
Time is up.
Sorry. It's never enough time.
Exactly. Any rebuttal?
Yeah. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay. Yeah, Paul Ellers. I think that's a good example of the division between the two parties. I would disagree that the skills are specialized, they'll probably hire one or two geologists at the most. The guys that are driving skidders can certainly drive heavy machinery. But again, I don't believe in jobs at any cost.
Okay, Tom.
Can I ask Susan Summer to address the allegation that there's a hidden agenda to make mining easier for sulfide mines in the town of Lynn? You've made this allegation.
Yes.
Mr. Tiffany says that this only applies to iron ore mines. What makes you think that there's a hidden agenda?
Thank you very much for asking that question. If you look at AB 426, and it redefines the term sulfide mining or sulfide ore body. So we have a current sulfide mining moratorium in our statutes, and it describes what a sulfide ore body is. But specifically in AB 426, they redefined that so that if you are doing a ferrous mine, an iron mine, you don't have to be worried if you come across any type of a sulfide ore body that's part of it. The Tyler Formation up in the Pinoki Range has pyrite in it. When pyrite is exposed to air and water, it causes acid mine drainage, which is sulfide pollution. That's why I say that.
Okay. Tom?
Current law has unclear standards. And the bill that we passed, AB 426, does not roll back existing standards for air, water, or groundwater. The DNR has the ability to protect the environment, both on and off the site. The federal government's going to review this. The EPA, the Corps of Engineers, they're going to review this. And the permitting process would end up being about 2 to 3 years. And I think we go down a very dangerous path here in saying out-of-state companies. Are we going to exclude out-of-state companies from doing business here in the state of Wisconsin? I think that would be very inappropriate. And that ore body up there could be jobs for 100 years. What company lasts for 100 years? I mean, our technology and know-how has advanced so far in 50 years. There's no doubt that we had problems. I mean, that we've had environmental problems as a result of heavy industry. But we've really cleaned those things up. Look at this paper mill right here in Rhinelander. Our technology and know-how is so much better than it was 50 years ago. We can do these things safely.
Okay. That's the rebuttal portion for Glenn's question. We're about halfway through on this forum tonight of the 12th State Senate District candidates. So we're going to move next to Kyle Rogers from the Northwoods River News with a question for Paul Ehlers.
When it comes to political races these days, the phrase "we have to create more jobs" is often heard. What people hear less of are ideas on how to actually accomplish that. What are some ideas you have, and how would you go about pursuing that if elected?
Okay, well, jobs is, I think it's the number one issue in Wisconsin, if not the whole United States. And I think we're spending a lot of time chasing yesterday's jobs. We are not going to get manufacturing jobs back from China. We're not going to get them back from Indonesia, Southeast Asia, these places. They're not coming back. So what we need is new thinking. We need to come up with a new way to look at job creation. A guy named Richard Florida wrote a book called The Creative Class, and it should be mandatory reading for anybody, any chamber of commerce, anywhere. That said, government, I don't believe government creates jobs. I work for the government. I get a paycheck. I pay taxes, but everybody else has to pay that difference. Okay? So what we need to do is do what we did with Mercury Marine and Harley Davidson. And I would advocate the phasing out of all personal income taxes and all corporate income taxes. We cannot imagine the creative energies that could be unleashed. We need incentives to achieve in this state, not incentives to not achieve. So I don't know if I don't have enough time.
Okay.
But that I could go forever on that.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Susan Summer.
We have some really exciting opportunities happening right now up in the 12th State Senate District, which is a good example for the whole rest of the state as far as creating new jobs. Vilas County has a fantastic Vilas County Economic Development Commission. They are working very hard with a nonprofit group that set up an incubator program, which is located in the old Cranberry factory in Eagle River. That incubator program is a nonprofit group working hand in hand. They have so many applicants now that they can't even fill all of the positions for the folks who want to come in and be part of that incubator program. This is a startup program for people. You can stay there as long as 2 years, rent space at a very reasonable rate, use their facilities, their conferencing, video conferencing facilities. You can have access to broadband. I know of two companies right now that are in there, a woman who does a stitchery business who would not have been able to do it without this opportunity, and a man who has moved into our 12-state Senate district because he's always wanted to live here because of the quality of life we have up here, but could never figure out a way to do it until this opportunity arose. He has access to broadband because his business is internet-driven, and now he can live and work in the place that he loves. Those are exciting opportunities. Now, another really fantastic idea that's come out of all of that is is for broadband, which is an incredible value for all of us here because people who work outside of the district but come and vacation up here or have second homes can continue their work and stay here longer, bringing money into the economy, and new people can come up here because of what broadband offers us. Stay here, live here, work here.
Okay. Thank you, Susan. And Tom Tiffany.
It's great to hear Paul Ehlers talk about government does not create jobs, because that's exactly right. And that's what we did in this session of the legislature. We said that first of all, we had to get the state budget under control. Been running deficits for over a decade. Today's budget deficit leads to tomorrow's tax increases. We want to leave more money in people's pockets. So we've got a legitimately balanced budget, as well as we've tried to reduce mandates that come from Madison. And that's the place where you set the foundation to have real economic growth here in the state of Wisconsin. So we began with that starting point. I would differ a little bit with Mr. Ehlers, though, in regards to manufacturing. I really believe that we can rejuvenate manufacturing, not just here in Wisconsin, but we can do it across the country. And one of the bills that we passed this past year was a manufacturing tax credit, and that's phased in now over the next 5 to 6 years. It gives a tremendous incentive for manufacturers to come to Wisconsin. And if you look at the rankings for Wisconsin of business people, if you look at 2008 versus now, 2012, whereas 10 to 15% were optimistic back then, 4 or 5 years ago, there's 80 to 90% now are saying we're optimistic and we're going to build here. And there's a great example right here in Rhinelander. That's PrintPak. They were not originally going to build their new plant here in the city of Rhinelander. They chose northern Wisconsin because they saw the direction that this state is going in. They understood we were going to be responsible in budgeting, and they've chosen to build that new plant here in northern Wisconsin. We want to see more success stories like that.
Thank you, Tom Tiffany. And
is there any rebuttal stuff?
Do you want to rebut?
Just real quickly. I think broadband is a role for government. It's roads, infrastructure, for sure. And again, tax credits are corporate welfare. How come some guys get the deals and some guys don't? What was good for Harley Davidson should have been good for every Wisconsin business. So I don't like that policy. Reduce taxes, phase them out. Level playing field, that the companies that are run well, make a profit, do it. They don't need corporate welfare and handouts from the state.
You're listening to the 12th State Senate Candidates Debate with Libertarian Paul Ehlers, Democrat Susan Sommer, and Republican Tom Tiffany, recorded in the WXPR Rhinelander studios on Wednesday, September 19th.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
Well, now we'll move on to Matt Doyle with the next question for Susan Sommer.
Hey, Susan. So what is the future of government-aided health care, whether it's Badger Care, Medicaid? We're talking about an aging population specifically. Many studies say that Wisconsin's going to be getting older, and specifically up here in the north, with a lot of people come up here to retire. What is the future of government-aided health care up in this area and in the state of Wisconsin?
We have a great opportunity now to make up for what happened in the last legislative session when they cut aid to family care, to senior care, not to mention reducing the federal poverty level guidelines so that fewer people now can qualify for Badger Care and Medicaid. What is our great opportunity? It's implementing the Affordable Care Act. Now, we can sit around and wait for the federal government to come in and tell us to do that in 2014, or we can step up and do what's right, regardless of what our governor says we should do or shouldn't do, and implement that program right away. We can, in fact, offer more in Medicaid to Medicaid people at this point if we wish to under the Affordable Care Act. We don't have to wait until 2014. So let's do that. We do hear, especially in the 12-state Senate district, about 65% of the population is going to be over the age of 65 soon. How do we help these folks? I've talked to people down in Elko, for example, Pelican Lake, who have no transportation, who have to take care of aging parents but can't get them to an adult daycare center because there's nothing close enough. We've got to use the resources that we have instead of taking them away to make sure that we can offer a quality of life to all of our citizens, including our aging population, as you've pointed out. And one of the projects that I will work on as senator is a public option for health insurance. We can run that through our Badger Care system. We can, because of its inherent nature being a not-for-profit, the cost for insurance will be less, so that not only will we have the private health insurance exchanges under the Affordable Care Act, but we'll have this public option for health insurance that would by nature cost less, so that everybody can afford health care.
Okay. Thank you, Susan. And Tom Tiffany.
Well, let's talk about what we did in this last session. We preserved senior care. We, during the budget process, we put senior care back in the budget, and I voted for that budget. Medicaid, we put an additional $1.2 billion into Medicaid. It was, of all the line items in the budget from this past budget, it is the one that got the most significant increase. Most of them were pretty static, but we added $1.2 billion to Medicaid. So we really tried to make sure that we were taking care of people who are in need. And we also passed HSAs, which help small businesses, health savings accounts. And so there's other things that we did like that. I think we really do have to wait and see what happens on November 6th at the federal level before we go implementing Obamacare. One of the things that Obamacare does do is it will not allow waivers to the states, and that's very troublesome to me. So I think we need to see what happens on November 6th. But even more than that, how are we going to fund Medicaid and these other programs? We have to have a strong economic climate where we reduce unemployment, we have more jobs created, we have more taxpayers. That's how we fund these public services. And so we really need to keep our eye on the ball to keep to rebuild our economy and get it growing.
Paul Ehlers.
This is a very tough issue, and that's why it's not solved, and that's why it's a mess. I believe that people on Medicaid want jobs. I think that poor people want a good job and will take a job if there's one available, so that will help some of that problem, is getting some jobs. Somehow we have to balance compassion with the idea of personal responsibility. That is a hallmark of a libertarian. I think we have to have non-employer health care, so that if you lose your job, you don't lose your health care. And I know the Affordable Care Act says if you have more than 50 employees, you have to provide them health care. That's going to kill jobs. And so, you know, I can't tell you I have an answer. I don't have an answer, but I know somewhere we have to talk about an incentive to myself to take care of myself. And the health savings accounts are great, but let's not make sure you have to spend them all in a year. Let's do those things right. Let's roll those son of a guns over. If we have to do this, can we look at it like maybe it's a public utility? I mean, we only have one electric company that serves the North. You know, is there a model there that we can maybe use? You know, if anybody's got an answer to this, I'll listen, but I don't.
Okay, good. That's time's up for that. Now, anyone want to rebut on that question? Anything more to say?
I would just add this. I really believe that hopefully we can devise a Wisconsin system that's good for Wisconsin rather than having this mandate from the federal government called Obamacare. I mean, when the founders set up this country, they viewed the states as these laboratories where you can find innovative solutions. We've seen a number of states already go this route, like Tennessee over the years, and they've disbanded their systems because they were not working. I think you really need to allow a state-run system. That's going to be most effective. That's what I hope will happen for Wisconsin so that we can devise our own system rather than using the cookie-cutter approach that comes from the federal level.
Susan?
Yes. I'm sick and tired of people calling it Obamacare. It's the Affordable Care Act. You talk about divisiveness in politics and partisan politics. This is a prime example of it. Let's call it what it is. It's the Affordable Care Act. And when you're talking about states being in control, that's what that act allows us to do, to implement it the way that we see is best for our state. So let's do it.
Okay. Paul, any response? Okay. Next, we're going to have Craig Mandley with a question for Tom Tiffany.
Tom, should Wisconsin's voter ID law, which is currently somewhat befuddled in the court system, be upheld?
Yes, it should. I voted for that bill in the current session of the legislature, and I believe it was a good bill. People having to show that they are who they are when they go into the voting place. And we carefully crafted this to make sure that those that may have impediments to getting that photo ID, that they could get it, and we, the taxpayers, would pay for that so that everyone who wants to cast a vote can cast their vote legitimately. So I fully support that, and I hope the courts uphold this because it's important that we have those. We want to encourage as many people as possible to vote, but it's also your responsibility to vote legally. And it's wrong if we disenfranchise someone who has cast an honest ballot by someone who has not cast an honest ballot.
Okay. Paul Ellers?
I'm against the voter ID law. I think the rules in place for voter registration are sufficient. I think this is very few votes are, heck, half of us don't vote. So we're worried about how many votes that are illegal. This is just another government telling us what to do, heavy hand to Madison. No thanks.
Okay. Susan Summer?
Driven strictly along a party agenda, a way to make sure that folks who already have a difficult enough time simply aren't going to be able to vote. It's shameful. And I've talked to people who've been poll workers and who've had to turn folks away, an elderly woman who knows exactly who she is and where she's lived all her life, but for some reason doesn't have whatever ID is now required that she has to have. It's absolutely a ploy to make sure that fewer of us are able to exercise our right to vote. It's a bad law.
Any rebuttal?
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we had to do this. You know, people in northern Wisconsin are generally honest. You know, I don't think we have a voter fraud problem here in northern Wisconsin. But if you go back to the 2004 election and look at the study that came out from the Milwaukee Police Department where they showed 4,600 more people voted than were registered that day in the presidential election of 2004, that's a problem. And when we saw recently news that came out of Maryland where a person that was running for Congress voted both in Maryland and in Florida. I mean, there are cases of voter fraud that are going on out there, and it is very important that we have people casting an honest ballot, because if someone is not, then you're taking the vote away from someone who did cast an honest ballot. This is a common sense measure. We have photo ID for virtually everything that you purchase these days, you know, and this is a fundamental right to vote. You should have to show a photo ID.
Paul, any rebuttal? Okay. Next question. We have about 10 minutes before we go to our closing statements, so we'll keep that in mind. Glenn Moberg with a question for Paul Ellers.
Mr. Ellers, you're a libertarian. I want to know what that means to you on a couple of social issues. Are you in favor of making abortion illegal or putting additional restrictions on abortion in Wisconsin, or do you believe that abortion is a right? Also, are you in favor of or opposed to legalizing gay marriage, and do you support or favor repealing Wisconsin's constitutional amendment defining marriage as between one man and one woman?
Well, a libertarian to me is someone that's fed up with the Republicans and the Democrats. Okay? And a libertarian is someone that would like to pursue their own happiness in their own way. Now, I personally believe that life begins at conception. I do not have the right to tell someone else they can't have an abortion. Okay, it's none of my business what a woman and her doctor and her spouse, what someone else wants to do, it's none of my business. Does that answer your question on abortion? Okay, I would not do anything to make it illegal. Gay marriage, none of my business. None of the government's business.
Okay, that's Paul Ellers. Glenn, are you directing that as Susan for the same?
All three of them can answer.
Okay, Susan, you're next.
I believe that every person has the right to make a decision regarding an abortion, and in particular, obviously, the woman. It's not something that any government should be able to tell me what to do with my own body. The choice that I make is a moral choice. For me, it would be based on my faith as well. It's a choice that I would not want to ever have to make, but I don't want a government telling me that I cannot make it if it's a choice I feel I must make. When my husband and I got married in 2005, we were married on the steps of the community center in the 61-home neighborhood that we were building, Habitat neighborhood. We were married outdoors with volunteers and folks who had built those homes with us. And when I thought of all the red tape that goes along with the government needing to know if I'm married or not and what I have to do to stand up in front of God and my husband and our family, friends, and the people we love and make that commitment, which to me is the commitment I care about, I wonder, too, what business does the government have stepping inside of my marriage? And when I think of people who choose in their older age not to get married because of the implications legally that that will have on them, or people who make the horrible decision to get divorced because they can't support the other spouse for health care, people should be able to do what they want with their commitment of love to one another if it's not hurting anybody else. And that would be my answer to that question.
Okay. Tom Tiffany?
I do believe life begins at conception, and therefore we cannot take that life. And so if people were to categorize me, I am pro-life. And in terms of gay marriage, I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. And I think it's important to protect that because it's the basis of the family. And we need to do everything we can to protect the family and make it stronger, not weaken it.
Any rebuttal on that question?
Yes. I have dear friends who raise children in wonderful homes who don't happen to be of the same sex, and they have families that are as wonderful, as protective, as encouraging as the family I grew up in as a child. I'm proud to know them. I'm proud to know their children.
Okay.
Can I comment?
Sure.
And I don't dispute that at all. Children can be raised properly in many different ways, but it has been shown that it works best with the family, that is how children do the best. And so I think it's very important we do everything we can to try to protect the family.
You're listening to the 12th State Senate Candidates Debate with Libertarian Paul Ellers, Democrat Susan Summer, and Republican Tom Tiffany, recorded in the WXPR Rhinelander Studios on Wednesday, September 19th.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Kyle Rogers, your next question for Susan Summer.
Thank you. What's one piece of legislation you would get behind immediately if elected?
The public option for health insurance that I spoke about earlier. It's exciting that we have the opportunity to implement the Affordable Care Act, and I want to make sure that we have a public option for health insurance as a part of that. I also would work very hard to restore full funding to our education system. Mr. Ehlers was talking earlier about a funding formula. Superintendent Tony Evers has what's called a fair funding for our schools formula, which is a great way to reevaluate how we fund our schools, in particular here in the 12th State Senate District, because we get what's called zero aid. Since our property values are so high, it doesn't take into account the fact that many of us are middle to low income people. We're struggling just to make it every day, to raise our children, to get them off to school every day. Let's reconsider our funding formula for our schools. In light of what happened in the last legislative session and the drastic cuts to our education system, we must restore full funding so that our children have the best possible education, and we should reconsider the funding formula that we use.
Okay, Tom, Tiffany.
I'd want to build on the foundation that we created here in this session of the legislature, where we passed a legitimately balanced budget, first one in over a decade, and the numbers coming out of the Legislative Fiscal Bureau are showing that we are on path to do that. We're not going to have to make up, you know, a couple billion dollars here with this next budget. Very important. That way we're not going to have to raise taxes on people. We're going to be able to leave more money in people's pockets. They're going to be able to invest in their homes, their businesses, and their families. And also, that third commitment that I made to people was that we're going to reform the Department of Natural Resources, and as well as other state agencies. And we've gotten off to a good start there, but man, we've got a lot more work to be done there to reduce mandates, to reduce regulations. It creates a better business climate here in the state of Wisconsin when state government is spending within the taxpayers' means and they reduce mandates and regulations that allow them to go about their business, gives greater local control, let people at the local level be able to make those decisions where they're going to create jobs. Now, to one thing in particular, I do think we need to work on the technology side of it. We passed a telecommunications bill this past session, but I think we need to do more to expand broadband. We're seeing more of it roll out here in northern Wisconsin. I'm hearing from some of my neighbors out in the remote area of the Willow Flowage that are starting to get broadband. I think we need to try to do everything we can to roll that out further, because it really is a game changer, and it really balances the playing field for those of us in northern Wisconsin.
Okay. Thank you, Tom, Tiffany. Paul Ehlers?
I'd have a hard time picking out one piece of legislation, so I've got three things, and I will make a decision before I'm done, though, okay? I would like to try to bring the National Guard home. They have no business fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'd like to end the shared revenue formula. I don't want to tweak it. I don't want to take a penknife to it and cover it up. I want to take axe to it. And I probably want to end the income tax. I'd prefer to phase that out. So the first thing I think I would try to do would be bring the troops home from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Any rebuttal? Or are we good?
May I?
Sure.
Mr. Tiffany says he wants to build on the foundation that we have created here this last legislative session. That's absolutely frightening to me, because if we continue in that direction, we're going to only further divide our state. And when we think about the 12th State Senate District and the needs that we have up here and what we value, that's even more frightening, especially when you look at it from a conservation point of view. Because here in the 12th State Senate District, conservation is our business. It's not outside state interests. It's not about big corporations coming in here and telling us what we need to do, how to change our landscape. We know what we need to do. That's what we've got to move forward with.
Okay. Any other rebuttal? Well, we have about 3 minutes before we need to go to our closing statements. So if you're quick, we can get one more question in, and it would come from Matt Doyle.
We've touched on it a few times, but I guess just we want to touch on it again, just education and the current funding formula that is out there. I mean, rural school districts seem to be the ones that are left out to dry in this equation. What would you do to, you know, kind of take on Republicans or Democrats from other areas that, you know, their schools might be well-funded down in the southeastern part of the state, where up here many aren't, and they're in remote areas where students might be, you know, in essence, getting the shaft. Let's talk about education really, really quickly.
Who gets first crack?
Paul Ehlers.
Ah, cool. Okay. Well, my understanding is that, oh, many, many years ago, the state government said, hey, we're going to fund 66% of the cost of the school. And in exchange for that, they said, you know, we got to make sure that you guys don't go hog wild up there. So we're going to put a property freeze or a cap on property taxes. Well, now we're down to 60% state funding, and the caps are still there. Okay. And they have all these kind of categorical aids that if you, it's a shell game. So why can't we have our own schools the way we want them? Let's get the state out of K-12 education. Why can't we spend more money if we want to? We elect the school board. We elect the county board. We elect our mayor. We elect our aldermen. If we want to have the world's best school, why can't we?
Okay. Paul Ehlers, next we will have a comment will be from Susan Summer.
I love the public education system, and I'm grateful that we have the means to do that here in the state of Wisconsin. As I said, I graduated from Rylander High School, and I attended grade school and junior high school here as well in Rylander and had a fantastic education. I'm a strong proponent of it. It frightens me, the attempt by the current administration to push for privatization of our school system. Your question had to do with the 12 state Senate district and the funding formula. I mentioned earlier the fair funding for our schools formula that Superintendent Tony Evers has proposed. And that does take into account the fact that, especially in the 12 state Senate district, for example, children would get a certain sum of money for each child, up to perhaps $3,000, to take into account the fact that we do have lower income families up here. There's another wonderful program under consideration that the Institute for Wisconsin's Future talks about, a Penny for a Kid campaign. And I mentioned that at the League of Women Voters Forum. That's raising the sales tax by a penny. It hasn't been raised in over 28 years. The increased revenue would go specifically for education. It is by nature a regressive sales tax. That's accurate. But that program has set aside 20% to cover the needs of lower income people, such as giving more to the homestead tax credit relief.
Sorry, Susan.
That's all right.
I have to cut you there. Tom?
If I'm fortunate enough to be elected, I'm looking forward to talking to Paul Ehlers about greater local control, because I think that there's some kernel of some good stuff that is there. A couple things that we can do, I think, within the current system that could be helpful is to change the sparsity aid formula. I believe the Tomahawk school system falls through the cracks because they're above the enrollment threshold where they can qualify for sparsity aid. So I think that's something within the current system that we could possibly change. Another thing, and this gets away from funding a little bit, but something that's got me concerned right now is we're replacing the WKCE as the testing program with Secretary Evers is talking about using the ACT now, which is very college-driven. When we see that proposal come out in 2013, I really want to evaluate that, because I'm not sure that we need to be driving so many kids on that college track. I think maybe more of them should be going on the technical track. And so that's something that I'm really going to take a close look at. And I don't believe that we should be raising taxes, the penny for a kid or whatever. To raise taxes right now will harm the economy. And the number one thing that we can do to provide public services in this state is to get our economy in better shape, including here in northern Wisconsin. I just did a press conference with an administrator over in Goodman Armstrong Creek, where as a result of terrible forestry practices on the national forest lands, it is harming their school over there. We have to get our economy going.
And, you know, we're almost out of time. So what we're going to do right now is very quickly each of you give a closing statement. And we'll begin, Paul, with your close.
Okay, well, thank you. I had a friend ask me what my vision for Wisconsin is. You know, why are you running? What do you want to do? And boy, that's a tough thing to think about. You know, I want to have a state of Wisconsin where people have this kind of air of expectancy. You know, some places have a palpable buzz. You go and you can feel it, and everybody is energized. And that's what I want for Wisconsin. I don't know how to get it. I don't know, really know how to teach it, but I know taxing the rich isn't going to do it. I know busting the unions isn't going to do it. I know fleeing to Illinois isn't going to do it. And I know bullying state employees isn't going to do it. Okay? So it's clear the Democrats and Republicans can't work together. You heard them tonight. You know, so I think we got to start looking at third parties, Greens, Libertarians, Independents, whatever.
Okay. Susan, very quickly.
First of all, I refuse to be pigeonholed into any particular stigma that's attached to any given political party. I'm from the 12th State Senate District. I love it here. I grew up here, and that's why I came home, because of how much I love it and what I care about it and how beautiful it is. And what I want to see is that our interests here are protected, valued, and respected down in Madison. I think it is true that there is a disconnect between people in the southern part of the state and what we all believe and hold to be true up here in the 12th State Senate District. And I understand that, and I live here because of it. I live here with less because, in truth, what I have is so much more. I live at the edge of the Nicolet National Forest in a little log cabin. I grew up on a lake. I was blessed as a child to do that. I grew up hunting, understanding the meaning of the outdoors and what we value here. So that's what I want to be able to do when I get down to Madison, is represent our interests, not corporate interests or special interests.
Thank you. Tom?
Boy, I want to thank WXPR and your media partners here for putting this on tonight. You know, we've set a new foundation for the state of Wisconsin here, and we've got the building blocks here in northern Wisconsin with forestry, tourism, and manufacturing to really make our economy take off. I'm optimistic, but we need to continue on the path of fiscal responsibility, not raising people's taxes, and having greater accountability by our state agencies. And I make the commitment to the voters up here. I will follow through on that every day that I'm down there to have sound budgeting and have an accountability by our state government to the people of northern Wisconsin. My name is Tom Tiffany. I'm running for state senate, and I hope to earn your vote on November 6th.
And with that, we're going to have to close very quickly. Thank you to everyone who listened tonight, and also to the panelists who came in, Tom Tiffany, Susan Sommer, and Paul Ehlers, and our media panel. I'm Ken Kroll.
You've been listening to a special Route 51 presentation of the 12th State Senate District Candidates Debate with Libertarian Paul Ehlers, Democrat Susan Sommer, and Republican Tom Tiffany, recorded September 19th at the WXPR Radio Studios in Rhinelander, moderated by News Director Ken Kroll. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining me on the debate panel, WJFW anchor reporter Matt Doyle, North Star Journal editor Craig Mandley, and Northwoods River News reporter Kyle Rogers. Next Thursday on Route 51, the Wisconsin Public Radio Wausau Daily Herald Forum with the candidates for Central Wisconsin's 85th and 86th Assembly Districts. In the 85th District, Libertarian Jim Moss, Republican Pat Snyder, and Democrat Mandy Wright. And in the 86th District, Democrat Dennis Halkoski and Republican John Spiros. Joining me on the debate panel, Robert Menser, opinion page editor of the Wausau Daily Herald. The debate takes place Wednesday, October 3rd from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement Theater, 625 Stewart Avenue on Wausau's west side. It is open to the public, and we hope to see you there. If not, we hope you listen in next Thursday at 5 on Route 51, regional talk radio on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Until then, thanks for riding along with us. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and we're heading out of town.